6:14 now, rainy Tuesday morning, and a flash flood warning in effect until about 8:15, I think. The rain should move out between 9 and 10, highs of 80 today, then the cold air filters in. And I was talking about the flashes before and having them on and how people are annoyed, and somebody texted and said it's annoying because it messes with your depth perception of the car with the flashes, which is dangerous and why it's illegal. I understand that, but what I find interesting about that is the first thing you said was it's annoying. You didn't say it's dangerous. You said it's annoying. And I just wonder why that annoys people so, because it's okay. Either way, I'm driving carefully, but it's illegal. Don't do it, and make sure you get your headlights on, although it's dark, so I would hope people are doing that anyway. Although, while I'm on this tear, I saw somebody run a red light at Holiday and MacArthur this morning in a black vehicle with no lights on in a pouring rain. Are you trying to cause an accident? Maybe. Robert Hogan joins us, Professor, Department Chair of Political Science at LSU. Morning, Dr. Hogan. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing really well.
Speaking of trying to cause an accident, I have a feeling that when it comes to former President Trump, I'm just going to call him that because there's too many elects, former this and that and the other thing. When it comes to President Trump, I think that he's dipping his toes in the water here to see just how much power they have in the Senate. And a friend of mine writes fan fiction, and he sent me a thing that I thought was kind of cute, and it was what's the craziest stunt we could pull to see who's terrified of us and who isn't was the question on the table. After a few seconds of silence, a voice was heard from a far corner of the room. That's easy. Appoint Matt Gaetz to be Attorney General. After a few moments of awkward laughter, Stephen Miller turned toward the unpaid staffer. That might, his voice and tone, be a great idea. With that, the plan began to develop. I wonder if all of these picks or some of them are not litmus tests to see just how much power the Trump administration is going to have. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility. A lot of people, I mean, because these nominations are really so over the top.
That's why I read the fan fiction to you, Professor, because when I saw this, I thought, you know what, that's pretty well written. What's the craziest stunt we could pull? Well, let's name Matt Gaetz to be Attorney General, right? Go ahead.
Right. Robert Kennedy is Health and Human Services.
There you go. Another one right there. That's right.
Right. I mean, is that what he's trying to do to sort of test the limit? I don't know. I tend to go with the point of view that he is doing this because these are people that he believes in and wants to put in those roles. He wants people who are disruptors. And you know, this sort of revenge politics that seeps very close to the surface with Trump throughout his time in office, certainly fits the Matt Gaetz nomination. This is someone who he wants to exact revenge for his grievances on the Justice Department, and this is the best way to do it. You put someone in there who's going to really tear things up and change things in ways that the people who work there, long-term people who've made their career there, are not going to like it at all. Is it a test of seeing the limits of his power with senators? Yeah, I mean, I think that's a secondary thing. I think this is something that I think we can take Trump at his word. This is what he wants. This is the person that he believes will do the best job to do his bidding. He's someone, above all else, is loyal to Trump. And Trump, you know, may not care that much about the Defense Department, the Agriculture Department, or the Transportation Department, but by gosh, he cares about who is going to be in this position because he wants them to achieve the goals that he wants to achieve, and he wants to be able to pick up the phone. I mean, one of the things, you know, presidents have long had difficulty managing their cabinet secretaries, right? They appoint to someone, they go away, and they, as it said, they sort of, cabinet secretaries often take on the role as advocates for the department. Yeah, that they're running, and presidents have difficulty, you know, exacting, you know, their ability to get their ideological position as well as their agenda heard and acted upon. And so this is what better way of doing that than appointing a staunch loyalist to that position who will do anything that you want.
So with that being said, what happens now in the Senate? It's like, okay, made his move in this game of chess. Now it's up to the Senate. What do we expect to see from them?
Well, I think there's gonna, I think there's a lot of deference. If you, I mean, the first thing usually out of the mouths of every Republican senator is asked about this is that, well, the president deserves to have the people that he wants in these positions of authority and power to push his agenda forward. So I think you're going to get a lot of deference. I mean, you've already seen from the Speaker of the House, who has the ability to force the release of this ethics probe on Gates, has said he doesn't think that's necessarily a good idea. So, you know, I think that there are lots of reasons that people will be giving for this. I think the other thing that Trump is going to benefit from that we don't recognize right now is that as we move closer and closer to him taking the oath of office, there's going to be a whole lot more stuff on the agenda that may even be bigger. He hasn't put forth the specifics of any policy proposals that he plans to have introduced in the Congress, or what specific executive action he's going to take. Part of how Trump achieves what he achieves is through this constant, you're constantly having one crisis or one outrage over another. And right now, Matt Gaetz is the biggest thing that people are talking about, or one of the biggest things. But what's it going to be next week? There may be something even more huge that we're talking about with regard to Trump, and this sort of falls in the background. And in that way, in that, under those conditions, the president is able many times to get what he wants.
Let me take a break. Let's talk about role of cabinet secretaries. We come back. I'm getting texts from people in favor of Matt Gaetz, against Matt Gaetz, in favor of Robert Kennedy, against Robert Kennedy. What effect a cabinet secretary really does have on their everyday lives, or is it all sound and no fury, or the other way around? I get confused. 621, it's rainy, I know that. Let's look at traffic now on WWL. All right, 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Be careful out there, raining. Again, the flashers only if you're stopped. That's what the law says. We're talking to Dr. Robert Hogan, professor, department chair of political science at LSU. Professor, a couple of questions that came in. First of all, when it comes to Matt Gaetz, he resigned his current position in the House of Representatives, but he was reelected to a new term. So how does that all play out?
I'm not certain how it plays out in Florida. I suspect it will require a special election, and that is one of the issues regarding Trump's appointments. Is that?
But is there a distinction between resigning from this session of Congress or and the next that he was reelected to?
I don't know. Hmm. I mean, if he's resigned, I mean he and. I see what you're saying, yeah. But I don't think that matters. But this has been an issue, you know, with the Trump appointments, is that he's whittling. He already has the Republicans already have a very slim majority in the House, and this is, you know, creating vacancies, making it more difficult for them to achieve what they want in the House. So
somebody else wanted to know about Chief of Staff Susie Wiles. While not a cabinet position, I want you to talk about that because I think that's interesting. Be the first woman ever, which surprised me, to be Chief of Staff for a president in the history of the country. And the role of the Chief of Staff, while not an official cabinet position, how important that is when it comes to a president and setting the agenda and all those kind of things.
Yeah, I mean, the Chief of Staff has become the central point, the fulcrum, if you will, the gatekeeper in many administrations for all the cabinet-level secretaries as well as the White House office. You've got a lot of people who report to the president. The White House office was created back in the 40s or 50s, and those are offices that really mirror cabinet department areas. It's a way that the president tries to coordinate all the efforts in the administration for particular departments. And all of that flows through the gatekeeper, which is the Chief of Staff. So it has become a critical role as the size and scope of presidential power and just the size of government has been enhanced or increased. You need help doing that, and the gatekeeper is important. A lot of some presidents have used the Chief of Staff very much like a gatekeeper. No one comes to the president but by the Chief of Staff. Other administrations have been much more freewheeling, and you have presidents sort of phoning people and talking to whoever they want. You know, it's hard to imagine Trump being someone who utilizes the chief of staff as a chief gatekeeper. He is somebody who very often will pick up the phone and call whoever he wants and talk to whoever he wants. So it'll be interesting to watch this person in action. Let's put it that way.
I think it'll also be interesting to see how he gets along with the people that eventually wind up being cabinet secretaries, because he can have limited patience.
Yeah, I mean, several cabinet secretaries in his last administration were dismissed, in part because one could argue that he didn't know as much what he's doing. This time around, he is much more familiar with the Washington environment and who will be loyal to him and or not, because loyalty, I think, is one of the key things that's critical to him.
Thank you, Professor. Oh, and real quick, for the people that are concerned that a new cabinet secretary is going to make their life perfect, and the ones that think it's going to be the ruination of the country, I presume the truth is somewhere in between?
That would be a good way of putting it, yes, absolutely.
Thank you, Professor. I appreciate your time. Dr. Robert Hogan, Professor, you too, Professor and Department Chair of Political Science at LSU. We'll come back. We'll talk to Leah Long, Director of the Louisiana Chapter of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. See what the Louisiana small businesses are watching with the special session right now, 6:30, time for WWL First News. Cat 5 stirs up real quick. Leah Long joins us. Leah Long, Director of the Louisiana Chapter of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Good morning, Leah Long. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. I'm also watching it rain here, so I'll be ready for the cooler weather to come in.
Yeah, we all are. You're not driving, are you?
I'm not, but I am watching it rain.
All right. Tell me your thoughts on the special session.
Yeah, so we're down kind of to the last week almost. This is a wrap-up on Monday. There's a lot of moving parts. I don't really know currently kind of what the path forward is. I know our biggest concern as a small business was the service tax bill that expands the sales tax on services. It did get holed up on Thursday in the House, but they're actually bringing it back up today.
I'm having a little bit of a hard time hearing you, Leah, if we can go back and go a little bit slower, please.
Yeah, so our biggest kind of concerns this far has been, one, of course, the expansion of sales tax on services. And that bill actually got held up in on the House floor on Thursday, but the author is actually bringing it back today for a vote. So that's going to be a big day. We're concerned about that because it adds to the cost of doing business for these businesses that have never had to collect or remit sales tax. Because eventually they're going to have to pass on those cost burdens to their business onto consumers, because they're not going to be able to absorb these new costs when they have to hire someone to collect and remit sales tax. So that's a big issue for us. We're watching that. I know the Senate has said that, you know, they may do some adjustments to that bill. They may not even hear the bill. So it's kind of a waiting game on that to see what happens. And, you know, I always want to say that these small businesses, especially the list, it used to be 42 services. Now it's, I think, consolidated down to 18, 19. But unfortunately, that list still hits the smallest of the small businesses. And so those people don't really have the capital or maybe the extra income to invest into tax compliance. And so that's one thing that we're concerned about, because these small businesses are already struggling in an already inflated economy. And so that's a big thing that we're watching. Another thing that we're watching is vendor comp. That's actually going to be heard in Senate Revenue and SIF today. There's a bill that does away with vendor comp. And so a lot of people don't really understand what that is. But if you collect...
Well, hang on a second, Leah. I'm sorry, but again, this is your world. You're talking vendor comp and legend FISC, which is the Legislative and Fiscal Committee, for those that don't know, right?
Yes, okay. Yes. It's the legislative and on the Senate side. On
yes.
the Senate side.
This is your and field. So, I'm just trying to slow you down for the civilians. That's all.
Definitely. Definitely. And so vendor comp, it basically is if a business collects and remits their sales tax on time every month, they get a vendor comp. And it's capped at $1,500, which, you know, some people may say, well, that's not a lot of money. And you're right. It's really not. But you can't expect businesses to collect and remit and add burdens to their, you know, their bottom line for the government for free. I mean, no one does anything for free, but let's be honest. And so they're looking at doing away with that. And that's a big issue for us because, you know, when you go to a store and you use a credit card, that business is going to have to pay a swipe fee. And so there's actually some small businesses that pay more in swipe fees every month than they do in their rent. And so that is something to realize, that, you know, when you're paying with a credit card, because, you know, sometimes people, you know, they prefer cash or, you know, they prefer check, whatever it may be, because that business does have to eat some of the costs when you do use a credit card or debit card.
Let me take a break.
So that's a big thing.
All right, well, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. I'm going to talk to you about inventory taxes as well. Read a text from somebody that says, and you can respond when we come back, as a small business owner who has to pay taxes, it's kind of upsetting that others don't. You can address that when we come back. And more, we're talking to Leah Long, who is the director of the Louisiana chapter of the National Federation of Independent Businesses, about the special session, some of their concerns, vendor comp, the other about the expansion of the sales tax. 6:50, 10 till 7, a rainy morning, traffic now, WWL. 6:56, 4 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, on this rainy Tuesday morning, talking to Leah Long, director of the Louisiana chapter of the National Federation of Independent Businesses. Nobody's going anywhere quick this morning. Slow down, because getting in a wreck's not going to get you there any quicker. Somebody texted in, Leah Long, and said, as a small business owner who has to pay taxes, it's kind of upsetting that others don't. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, definitely I think that's a thing, and we've heard that from other people, but, you know, one big push that we've tried to tell the legislature is, you know, if we're going to, you know, impose new taxes, we need to have a centralized sales tax collection, because these small businesses already that have to pay taxes and collect and, you know, whatever the system is, there sometimes they have to collect and remit to 54 parishes. And so our tax structure is very hard, very difficult here in Louisiana, and so that's something we've been pushing. You know, we continue to push that. We told them even before they even thought about expanding the sales tax base, make it easier to collect and remit in the state. And, you know, you have some legislators that agree and you have some that don't, because it failed at the ballot box a few years ago. So that's a big issue, and we continue to push that as this plan moves forward.
That's not even part of this special session, though, is it?
No, it's not. But, I mean, it's one thing that we want to remind people. And, you know, I know you hear in the news that, you know, LDR and the administration base this plan off of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Well, one thing about North Carolina is they have a centralized sales tax collection.
You know,
so
we
are actually...
Leah, I'm
one
glad,
of two states.
Go ahead. I'm glad
Colorado
you said
does
that.
Not. Yeah.
Because I
yeah.
want to compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges, because you can't cherry pick, right? If you're going to say,
no. This
is what we do here, well, then you have to do everything that they do there, and you can't pick this and that. Talk about that, if you would, please.
Well, it's one of those things, you know, if we want to be like other states and we want to lower our personal income tax rate, we have to look at their tax structure fully. And some of those states surrounding us, like Mississippi, Arkansas, Texas, they have a centralized sales tax collection. So, you know, if they did in fact want to expand the base on to services, make it easier for these business owners to collect and remit. Because even these small business owners that already do that, I guarantee you it's a pain for them to have to collect or remit for 54 parishes, depending on their type of business. But if they're doing business in, you know, different parishes, they have to do that. And so that adds to the tax compliance burdens that they face. And so that's one thing I brought up when I did go to the table and I testified on House Bill 9. I brought the fact that, you know, if we're basing this plan off North Carolina, we need to realize they had centralized sales tax collection. And I think that should have been a discussion first before we move forward with even a tax reform, because that would make it easier. But you know, we still keep pushing that. You know, some people push back on it. Some people are like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Maybe we can do that in the future. But it's hard to, you know, go tell a business owner, hey, and a consumer now, you're going to pay more taxes on services, whatever it may be, without that, you know, centralized sales tax collection.
30 seconds left, Leah. Does NFIB have a position on inventory taxes and what's going on in the special session?
Yeah, we're definitely concerned about it, because some of those parishes that I know they're going to give a lump sum of $15 million to do away with inventory tax, some of them parishes may not do that. So at the end of the day, some of these small business owners may be stuck paying inventory tax. And, you know, at the end of the year, they already pay their taxes and they're hit with another, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 tax to pay on inventory. So that's something we're concerned about. We're talking to the administration, we're talking to legislators about it, and we're hoping to get that taken care of where the credit stays for a while. Even if the parish opts out of the program, then there's fine. We don't need inventory tax credit. But for the parishes that decide to not take the $15 million, we need to help those business owners in that area.
Devil's in the details. Thank you, Leah Long. Be safe in the rain. Leah Long, director of the NFIB, back with Pat Connick talking film credits, WWL.